I don't buy every conspiracy theory out there. In fact, you might say I'm a curious skeptic. But there is just enough evidence to consider the possibility that the powers that be are manipulating us like so many pawns on a chessboard. That's why we hear the theories out on Jim Harold's Conspiracy Corner. Welcome to the Conspiracy Corner. I am Jim Harold, and so glad to be with you once again. And we have a gentleman on the line. Actually, we were just chatting a little bit before we recorded here. Spoke to him 10 years ago, August of 2005, for the Paranormal Podcast, as we just celebrated the 10-year anniversary of that program, one of the very first guests there. And I'm sorry it took us so long to catch up, but today we're going to talk about his recent book, The Truth Agenda, Making Sense of Unexplained Mysteries, Global Cover-Ups, and Visions for a New Era. Our guest today is Andy Thomas. He is one of Britain's leading authors and lecturers on unexplained mysteries and global cover-ups. He's written many books, including Conspiracies and Vital Signs, which was nominated for Kindred Spirits magazine's Best Book Award. He's made numerous television and radio appearances around the globe, including programs for the BBC, NBC, the History Channel, and the National Geographic Channel. He regularly writes for Nexus Magazine, and he lives in England. Andy Thomas, welcome to the program today.
It's very nice to be here. Thank you.
So the truth agenda, that kind of hints at the idea that there is an actual agenda. And in the book, there's really a cornucopia of different unexplained phenomena, possible conspiracies, all these different things. Do you think at least some of these things are somehow linked?
Well, I do. And I mean, one of the interesting things is that when you start to investigate one area, whether it be, you know, the paranormal or the cover-ups or, you know, whatever angle you come in on, you very soon find that you're meeting people who are studying other things, that they cross-reference, they do connect. And in the end, what it comes down to, I think, is that there are subjects we are being encouraged not to look at. And then when you look at the, indeed, the agenda, that seem to want us not to look at them, you find they are linked. There are people in the establishment, albeit some in the shadows, who I think have a vested interest in us not discussing topics which for some reason they seem to feel uncomfortable about, probably because the more we know, the less control they have. So what I'm trying to do with the truth agenda is pull all of this together and show people where the connections are, and indeed, as the subtitle says, to make sense of them, because there's a lot of stuff out there. It can be overwhelming. Not everybody knows where to start, but what the truth agenda does is give you that starting point, but not lightweight. You know, it's given you a lot of stuff, but it's a great place to get a conduit to all these different things.
Conspiracy theory, that phrase is very loaded, and really, in the mainstream media, everyday conversation, if you mention the phrase conspiracy theory, and really, if you think about it, it's just saying that there are theories that there may be conspiracies in certain places, and that's been proven by history. There have been many, many conspiracies, but all of a sudden, flashing through your mind, even somebody who's into this stuff, that's a nut. Is that by design?
I think it is by design. And then I think what happens is it becomes by habit for those people that haven't looked at the evidence themselves. So yes, the term conspiracy theorist is now a term of abuse. And it's a very good way to close down a public conversation. If you say to people, oh, well, that person's just a conspiracy theorist. If you dismiss people like that enough, in the end, people just instantly make the association without any evidence at all, which says that that is not a person to be listened to or taken seriously. Now, you know, I'm sure a lot of your listeners will know, when you start to look at the evidence, you will find that there are serious cases to be made in a lot of these areas. And I think that's the problem. I think the authorities feel very threatened by that. They know, once you start looking at the fine detail of evidence in a lot of directions, that you can make strong cases. So what they do is they usually attack the messengers they personify them as a stereotype of somebody uneducated, somebody usually extremist, that nobody should listen to. And I mean, just here in England, this has really kicked off this week because our Prime Minister, David Cameron, is now trying to link all conspiracy theories with anti-Semitic extremism, which is, of course, not true at all. But it's, again, a fantastic way of trying to close down people that think there are things we should be talking about. And again, I mean, what I've tried to do in the Truth Agenda is be as moderate as I can and not be polarized, but say there is a case. And as you've just said, you're absolutely right. History shows again and again, conspiracies do exist. So the notion that they're not going on today would be foolish to believe that.
And this is the first time I've ever said this on the program, but I think there's a form of intellectual McCarthyism going on. It's the new McCarthyism, I would call it, is that if you say something that somebody doesn't like, you say that they're racist, sexist, homophobe, bigoted, whatever it might be, and then it's like, aha, that person will shut up. And I'm not, again, I'm not coming in favor in hate speech in any way. I it's kind of like that old line, can't we all just get along? I firmly believe that. And but just the fact that I have to immediately defend myself when I say that shows that there is this almost new McCarthyism that if you stray into certain political areas, that will be a way to shut you down. And what you explained is just another way that that could happen.
That's very true. And I mean, there is an academic elite that certainly here in Britain it has control of our media. You will not be hearing any serious treatment of the paranormal or any mystical beliefs anytime soon in our media, because what we've got are very sort of hard-minded scientific types that seem to have got a monopoly now where they are the ones that appear. If something strange occurs, it will be them telling you it's not true or making fun of it or making light of it. They never speak to the people that have these beliefs. They are now not even considered worth featuring unless it is to make fun of them. This is a very unfair representation, as you know. And it's something I think which is of great concern, because you can see it in all areas of the media. You can see it from governments. You can see that they are marginalizing day by day anybody with an unusual interest or belief. But I wonder how long that can be successful for. And that's why, of course, on the internet, you get a whole other view of the world altogether. And you'll find often many more people will believe these things than less. And yet we don't hear this in the mainstream media. So what we're being fed by the establishment, it is a tiny sliver of the world. It's not the whole picture at all, and it's very distorted, and it's very unfair. And that's why we, of course, are trying to get that information out there so we can strike at least some kind of balance.
And it's as a news consumer and information consumer, it's very challenging, because many of us of a certain age grew up, you know, being spoon-fed things, and here comes the internet, and now it's like this fire hose. And there's probably a lot of truth out there, and maybe probably a lot of things that aren't true. So kind of separating the wheat from the chaff, there's more responsibility, I think, on the individual these days than there's ever been.
Yes, I think that's true. But I think discernment has always been needed. I mean, the internet gets attacked a lot because, of course, it allows opinion to be put about with some level of authority that it wouldn't have had before. But then equally, you know, you can walk into libraries and find books that are plainly wrong.
Right, sure.
I've got books on my shelves that, you know, are just crazy stuff. So what's the difference? You have to find a level of understanding somewhere in your gut as to what feels right. And you have to use your brain, and you have to have some evidence as well. I mean, beliefs that are based on no evidence at all are always going to get a hard time. And I think rightly so. But there's enough stuff where there is clear evidence that we can focus on that and show people that, look, there is a case here. And I think the fact that there is such now a concerted effort to try to shut down the freedom of the internet makes you realize that the powers that be know the genie's out of the bottle, and they're very much trying to stick it back in. Right. And that's why we've got here David Cameron saying, right, it's all extremism. We've got attempts to try to shut down what they call over here esoteric content, which is in the small print of trying to shut down criminal pornography. Now, that's a strange link, isn't it? Esoteric material, right, and pornography. Where did that happen? But that's what they're trying to do. And it's very clever. By grouping it together with something that is known to be wrong, they make people on the outside who aren't really aware of what this material is immediately think, oh, yes, I don't want to see that. And we've got a lot of that going on, a lot of sneaky practices here, which are trying to shut down the internet. And everybody needs to fight for the freedom of this for as long as they can.
Now, in the book, you talk about you kind of have these different subheads, and you go from everything from UFOs and ancient mysteries to weapons of mass destruction and the moon landing. There's a lot to cover here, so I just want to hit a few key ones and get your impressions on it. Now, it all starts with these ancient mysteries, strange things, and strange information that are being uncovered by people. You know, the Graham Hancocks of the world, the Robert Schocks of the world, people like that. And it seems that there is a strong backlash from archaeologists, historians, and so forth concerning this kind of work. What kind of things did you take a look at for the Truth Agenda as it relates to ancient mysteries?
Well, I think the ancient mysteries are a good starting point because, of course, it then gives you a kind of a chronological foundation. I think a lot of the occult beliefs that clearly people in high levels of power today have, if you belong to a secret society, 9 times out of 10, your symbolism is going to come back to ancient Egyptian times, even earlier Sumerian. So it's then worth looking back at the various controversies around those beliefs. And of course, you've got a wide belief in things like the Anunnaki and the Nephilim, the notion that some kind of potentially extraterrestrial race interacted with mankind thousands of years ago, but left a legacy, which you can either believe is a bloodline or just the legacy of information, which has been passed on down through the years to, you know, tiers of power who have used it for themselves and for their own ends. So I start with that because that then sort of sets that up with then looking at modern mysteries that tap into it. Crop circles have been a passion of mine in the years past, and some of the symbolism of that seems to resonate with ancient symbolism. You've got, of course, UFO sightings going on today. You've got records of strange things seen in the sky years ago that may have been the same thing, but seen, of course, in a different framework. So by bringing all of the mysteries, ancient and modern, together, what you then show is that this is not new. Belief in these esoteric areas, if you wish to call them that, it's not new, and yet the evidence is still out there, it's still going on. And then, of course, you then can start to show that this is not being reflected in the mainstream media. And then the book goes on to then look at where this might be covered up, how it's being covered up. And then by using certain examples that are very well known, like the moon landings, which is very controversial, but of course some people will say, absolutely, we went to the moon. Others will say the evidence is clear that some of the evidence cannot be real. By looking at that in great detail, you can at least demonstrate that there is a case to be made that we've not been told the whole truth. And then, of course, if we've not been told the whole truth about that, you can bet your life you've not been told the truth about anything. And so the book goes on to the whole weapons of mass destruction debacle in Iraq, where we know we were lied to, and then 9/11, where, you know, I think at the last poll, over 50% of the world no longer believes the official story. And whatever did or didn't really happen, with good grounds, because the evidence does not stand up. So the book leads you to there, but then it starts to look at the consequences of these cover-ups. But ultimately, reaches some happier conclusions. And the last part of the book is about consciousness, about how we can use collective consciousness to shift this and actually change this and balance the agenda with something positive. So, you know, there is a thread that runs through the book that, you know, when you read it, it will begin to unfold, hopefully in a very coherent way.
Something you mentioned in the upper echelon of society, amongst the elite, that there's this belief in certain things, which is kind of ironic, seeing that they're trying to quell this kind of, quite kind of pursuits. I think to something, and you cover this in the book, the Bohemian Grove, which is a very strange place that has seen people like our American television presenter, I guess you would call it, Walter Cronkite, who was at one point the most trusted man in the America in the 60s, 70s, and early 80s. Ronald Reagan, the former president, all these people and more have been known to be part of the Bohemian Grove. So I guess I would ask two things. A, do you think amongst the elite that there's kind of a heavy-duty belief in these kind of things? And then tell us a little bit about Bohemian Grove, because it's very bizarre.
It is bizarre, and what is particularly bizarre about it is that it's in plain sight almost now. There have been well-known journalists, people like John Ronson, who's broken into the Bohemian Grove compound and filmed this famous ritual that they do, the cremation of care, where they sacrifice the effigy of a child to a giant stone owl, which of course does seem rather like a strange thing for our world leaders to be doing on their holidays. And yet, it's going on. We know it's going on, and the media ignores it. It pretends that we don't know, even though their own journalists have seen it. And this is where you realize this is not right. Now, there are some secret societies out there that I think are probably fairly harmless. But then when you get to the top and they get bigger and they get more occult-tinged, as Bohemian Grove clearly is, you begin to wonder. Now, those that have spoken about the Bohemian Grove ceremonies publicly have tried to sort of write it off as a pageant. I mean, like the voice artist Harry Shearer, whose voices for The Simpsons, yes, of course. Now, he claims he's been there. He says it's just a silly little party. Don't worry about it. But then, you know, when you're sacrificing effigies of children, particularly with all the paedophile scandals that are now breaking big, certainly over here, very much so, that's deeply uncomfortable. And there are, of course, a lot of conspiracy claims that there are paedophile rings, that there is ritual abuse. And this has been brushed aside for years. But now, with some of the evidence that's coming to light, this is now beginning to look more credible. So therefore, things like Bohemian Grove, which, as you've just said, many world leaders go to, your Bushes, your Blairs, your Kissingers, your Nixons, we assume people like Obama and Bush and David Cameron, we assume they go. This is of concern, because it's not shared. They don't tell us why they go or what they do. They have to accept that it's going on. This is going to make people wonder, of course it is, what else must be going on? If that can go on, and we are tacitly supporting it by basically funding these people to be there, well, what else? And so then when you put that together with all the other secret societies and the big quangos and the unelected bodies like the Bilderbergs and the Council on Foreign Relations and so on, you realize power long ago shifted sideways. We can elect who we want, but they are effectively being placed before us by other means which are not democratic. And when you look just a little bit deeper, the occult levels are, I think, sinister, and I think are of genuine concern.
Now, I want to talk to you about something I rarely talk about on these programs because it kind of bugs me, but I have to get beyond my comfort zone here because we want to give an honest airing to these things. 9/11. Now, when I hear about 9/11, my feeling is that, look, you had these people, they were religious zealots, they decided that they were going to change the world, and unfortunately, they succeeded. And they did what the government said they did, and I've been pretty vehement about that, and pretty anti anybody who has said anything else. That's my personal belief. However, these shows are about exploring all possibilities, including ones maybe I'm not comfortable with. Where am I missing the boat?
Okay, I mean, you're quite right to feel uncomfortable about it, because if 9/11 did not occur as we were told, then obviously that does raise some extremely deep and troubling questions. I think the issue we've got with 9/11 is this, that it is very likely Al-Qaeda were involved at some level. But the general view is that they were probably patsies. You know, there is a paper trail. You've got to have people there who appear to be guilty. So I think it is highly likely on some level that they were involved. Where I think it becomes difficult is that when you look at the evidence, the detail of what happened on the day and what happened within America itself, within the chain of command, it does look more and more like somebody, traitors, somebody within the intelligence network pulled strings to make it as successful as it was. Now, there are people that absolutely believe there were no Middle Eastern terrorists involved at all. I don't personally go down that route. I think they must have been, because otherwise you couldn't then blame anybody with even any credibility. If all of the data of 9/11 that we are told happened, if it stood up to complete scrutiny, there would be no issue here. The conspiracy theorists could be brushed aside as just paranoid. Unfortunately, that isn't the case, because you've got the laws of physics being contravened in the collapse of three towers, the Twin Towers, plus Building 7 nearby. It was never hit by an aeroplane, but just came down like a pack of cards later on. There are people that believe that 9/11 was actually coordinated from that building and that it had to be brought down. You've got big anomalies with the damage to the Pentagon. It seems very small for the size of the huge plane that we're told hit it. The trajectory of the plane coming into the Pentagon doesn't make sense. There is an organization called Pilots for 9/11 Truth. They've said you basically could not pull off the maneuver that we're told with a Boeing 757. And on it goes. You get the fact that the normal routine to intercept hijacks was not followed. You've got the testimony of people like Norman Mineta, who I believe was one of your transport secretaries around 9/11. Yeah. And he clearly, without, I think, realizing what he was doing, he clearly was present when Dick Cheney appeared to be allowing one of the planes to approach the Pentagon without intercepting it. Now, he made this testimony for the 9/11 Commission, which was investigating it. I think it's highly telling that they did not include that testimony in the final report, because it is rather damning. It looks like certain events were being allowed to occur. And the problem is you've got many eyewitnesses, you've got firemen, you've got rescue workers, people who were in, say, the Twin Towers on that day. So many of them describe explosions going off even before the towers collapsed. There was an enormous basement explosion before the first plane even hit. There are many witnesses to that. You have to obviously sooner or later make sense of this. And it doesn't make sense. The temperatures that we can clearly see burning at the Twin Towers, they are melting steel in some shots. You see molten metal running down the buildings. Now, whether you go with the views of people like Dr. Judy Wood or whether you go with the nanothermite theory, whatever it is, it does look like something else has been introduced into those buildings to burn hotter than they normally would. Because even if you accept the official data of 9/11, no fire could possibly have burned as hot as we see it, which could then have brought the buildings down. And I really would urge anybody that's not sure about this to look up architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth. They're not conspiracy theorists, but people like Richard Gage, they look at the footage of what happened to those buildings and they say this cannot be a natural collapse in the way that we are told. And when you read their data and you read their arguments, it is almost impossible to argue with at least the case that we've not been told the truth about what happened. And if we've not been told the truth in one area, then of course we have to consider that the whole thing could be a lie. Now, I know that is very uncomfortable, and particularly in America. Over here, we have conspiracy theories about the 7/7 bombings, where the London London Underground and a bus got blown up 10 years ago now. And again, British people find that very hard. And yet, even there are serious anomalies. The evidence doesn't appear to add up, which I think is why David Cameron is now starting to try to prosecute people that have those views, which to me is a very dangerous road to Orwellian thought crime. We have to have these conversations. And I admire you for saying at the beginning that it makes you uncomfortable. It makes anybody uncomfortable, or it should do, because they are uncomfortable conversations. But the evidence must be looked at. And that's why in The Truth Agenda, I spend, you know, quite a long chapter looking at the anomalies of 9/11, not telling anybody what to think. I mean, the book doesn't do that. It leaves you your own mind, but it shows enough evidence to clearly show that the official story does not add up. And that, unfortunately, is, of course, where people's qualms will then come in.
Now, two things I will say is that when this happened, a couple of things didn't pass the sniff test to me, but I've kind of put them out of my mind. Number one, the whole masterminding of this by one rich individual plays like the plot line of a James Bond movie. I mean, that's the first thing I thought about. I grew up, you know, I'm in my 40s, so I watched all the James Bond movies growing up, and it was always this rich Dr. No kind of person, you know, Goldfinger, this evil genius who masterminded the theft of all the gold from Fort Knox or whatever it might be. And even as a kid, I said, well, that's crazy. That could never happen. And then here on 9/11, and here's the other thing that kind of bugged me about it. Within what, 2 hours? Oh, it must be Osama bin Laden. It's like, well, wait a minute. If you knew this guy had this capability to do something like this, and you know, within 2 hours of it happening, why didn't you have an idea that he was up to something and taking him out? It those two things kind of didn't pass the sniff test to me, even though I maintain it is what we were told. I still think I fall into that category. But those two things were enough for me to say, well, let's wait a minute here.
Well, I mean, Jim, the thing is here, it is on record. It is on record that American intelligences had received warnings. They knew pretty much what was going to happen and when. There are various people, like the mayor of San Francisco, Mayor Willie Brown, was told not to fly to New York that day. Well, this was before anything happened. There's a lot like that. A lot of people seem to know what was going on. The stock market seemed to know. There were a lot of put options, which is basically where you're betting that the stock, you know, of a particular company will go down. A lot of put options were made on the companies that would suffer as a result of 9/11. It's way beyond chance. So it is clear warnings were given. Now, one sort of midway argument here is that people did not help 9/11 to happen within America, but that it was allowed to happen and that a stand down order was given. Now, is that morally any more positive than making it happen? Well, that's obviously an argument to be had. But, you know, they knew something was in the offing, and it does seem they did little to stop it. Personally, on a personal level, as I say, I believe Al-Qaeda were involved somewhere down the line. But I agree with you. I think the idea of one evil mastermind in a cave managing to pull all of this off without an extensive network of help, which must surely have come from within America itself, really does stretch credulity. And the fact that they were saying within 2 hours that he was responsible, when there was no reason to believe that at that point, does make you wonder. I think it was a reflex action. And of course, so the conspiracy view is that this was effectively a new world order move. You know, by doing this, it enabled the wars that we've had since to occur in the Middle East. It enabled what would appear to some minds to be the allowance of the rise of people like ISIS, that the destabilization of the Middle East is actually something that is required by the powers that be. Now, that might seem like an extreme view to some people, but when you look at what does not get acted on, when there is clearly intelligence, you do have to wonder. And I think we need to be open-minded, if nothing else, to the fairly clear fact, we are certainly not told the truth about most of the big events that go on. And certainly 9/11 was one of them. And if they really wanted to know what bin Laden had in mind all along, why did they kill him when they had the chance to take him alive? There's a lot of doubts even over the assassination. Was he even the real bin Laden? You know, we could go on. But they certainly should have taken him alive. And we should have learned a lot more. And it does seem rather convenient that he was removed. That is, if that was indeed even the man. So, you know, on it goes. But what I tried to do in the book is not be dogmatic. You know, I'm leaving people to make up their own minds. But you can see certainly there's a pattern where we are not told the whole truth. So therefore, what do we need to find out the truth? How can we live positively and balance anything that is deceptive in our society? And there are ways of doing it. And the collective consciousness is a tool that we have. And so, as I say, the last sort of part of the book, you know, explores that. There is very much positive message to the book.
Now, I want to talk about a couple of other things, but I just want to close out on this because I think it's top of mind with everybody these days. And it strikes me that if you look at the Cold War era, for example, you had two main superpowers, and China just starting to emerge, but two superpowers. And yeah, there was a lot of bad stuff going on, but the world was a pretty stable place. And, you know, somebody could push the button and it would all be over, but it was pretty stable for you know, over 40 years there. And then when you look at the Middle East, it was stable. Yes, you had a lot of bad actors and a lot of evil dictators who I'm sure oppress their people. When you look at people like Mubarak and Gaddafi and Saddam Hussein, but sometimes the devil you know is better than the devil you don't know, because if you look at the Middle East, you know, yes, there were scrapes. There was certainly the Gulf War. There were different things that went on. Of course, the 79 taking of the hostages, but it really didn't impact us that much except at the pump. Now, after the quote Arab Spring, which I think is maybe one of the greatest disasters in geopolitical history, at least for the West, you've got total destabilization. You've got, Gaddafi's gone, Mubarak's gone, Saddam Hussein is gone. And all these guys that we, you know, thought were pretty bad guys, even though the U.S. was, a quote ally with Mubarak, all these guys who were bad actors, they've been replaced by worse actors and a very destabilized area where, you know, nature abhors a vacuum. Here comes ISIS. And now they're literally, I was reading in the Times today, they're basically functioning like a state now. So you really have a huge problem. And when you look at something like the Iraq War, you think, oh my God, what were you thinking? It's just incredible.
I mean, this is where it comes down to, you have to make a decision to some degrees whether you believe that all of this is massive incompetence or whether you believe it is coordinated. And I think that's why, I mean, what you've just outlined there, the seeming endless run of very poor decisions don't really make sense. Whereas, although on one level it would seem that the terrible destabilization and chaos that we have over there at the moment, it might seem on the surface to be undesirable. On the other hand, it opens doors. It gives the West more of a military presence there. For instance, it gives us a reason to take more control by making countries like Libya, that was actually quite stable, albeit not run by somebody very nice, but, you know, it ran itself. Right. We've now left that in such a mess. There's a terrible refugee crisis. You've got people trying to come across the Mediterranean to get away. And you cannot see any reason why we did that and then left them without any basis to build a new society, unless we wanted them weak, that we wanted the mess that we've got there. Because then, of course, if a country is weakened by civil war and internal strife, it's not a threat to anybody on the outside. Now, it could be argued that the rise of Islamic State, or whatever we want to call them, was perhaps a gamble that didn't. But there is one view that they were allowed to rise because clearly they didn't just come out of nowhere. We were given the impression in the media that it took everybody by surprise. That cannot possibly be true. There's so much Western intelligence in that part of the world. But one theory is they were allowed to rise as big as they did. But then perhaps the hope was it would give an excuse to go in and start bombing in Syria and doing things. But then Islamic State got far bigger than anybody was expecting. Because conspiracy belief doesn't necessarily mean that the conspiracies themselves always work. Maybe there are mistakes within it. So a certain amount of calculated destabilization could have been factored in. But maybe now it's got out of hand and now they really have got some new big evil force to fight. But of course, there are others that will say even that was deliberate. And this is where you can only reach a kind of a sensible assessment by looking at as much evidence as you can and seeing what feels right. Because the problem we have at the moment, we have too many people barking at each other with opinions and what they believe, and it's not based enough in actual evidence. The evidence and the data is there. And what I always try to do in my lectures and in my books, and there's another book called Conspiracies, which you'll find out there as well, which looks sort of more in a more focused way at the hardcore beliefs. You know, I come down again and again to the view that you can believe anything you wish, but make sure there is evidence. It has to be about evidence. And I do believe there is enough evidence to say that at least some of what's going on, particularly in the Middle East, was a calculated gamble. Now, whether that gamble has worked or not is, of course, something people are going to have to consider. It may be that it's been a bit of a mistake.
There's so much I could ask you about. Because just fascinating stuff. One thing I do want to close out on, I do think it's important to know that some people of not goodwill hide behind these type of things. You were talking about the concern about anti-Semitism. And I don't think necessarily because you believe in some conspiracies or think they have that you're an anti-Semite. But there are people who have those kind of beliefs that do hide behind this kind of thing. I think it's important to say, at least, and I'm sure you agree, that none of this is to vilify one nationality, one ethnic group, people with certain political beliefs. I think everybody of all stripes has been victimized by governments and conspiracies. Not saying I believe in them all, but I think, you know, you can look at something like, for example, the Holocaust. And then there are people who believe you could tie that back to people in America who were very, very aware of it. And actually some companies maybe that actually assisted in it. So really, I believe that all of this crosses nationality lines, it crosses ethnic lines, and that vilification of one particular ethnic group or another has no place in my mind.
Well, I agree completely with you. And I think that's why we need to be very careful when we see certain beliefs being associated with racism, in essence, which is what it is. That's what we're dealing with here in Britain just this very week, is that what's been implied by our Prime Minister is that people, for instance, that question 9/11 are automatically going to be sympathetic to Muslim extremism. Well, that is just so untrue.
That's insane.
It's insane, but I'm afraid that is the inference. It's tacitly implied. It is stupid, but it's a fantastic way of then shutting down people that have serious reasons to believe in something by immediately making them appear to be part of an extremist network that they've got nothing to do with. And I mean, here's the thing. Of course, there are, in amongst the conspiracy world, there are people who are racist, there are people with very extreme beliefs, but equally, there's lots of people who are not. And they would not feel represented by those people. So, you know, you're absolutely right. You look around the world, just about every species, race, civilization, society at some point or another has done something unpleasant. It does not mean that you then brand that entire group with something negative. You have to use your brain. And unfortunately, all too often, people don't. So, you know, this is the thing. Yes, are there Muslim agendas? Yes. Are there Zionist agendas? Yes. But does that mean that that's what's going on with everything bad in the world? No, of course it doesn't. And we have to be completely sensible. And this is the problem. What's happening at the moment is we're being pushed into corners of polarization. And it's then, therefore, very easy to attack the people with unusual beliefs as it's portrayed in the media. And I think this is unfortunate. We should now be adult enough, I think, as a species, that we should be able to have conversations where we can look at the evidence for anything without pointing the finger at one group and holding them to blame for everything. That is a very old-fashioned thing that we should have left behind probably about 1,000 years ago. It's time to start now. And again, I address this in the truth agenda. There are different ways we can be. It's not hard. It's not difficult to change that kind of attitude. And polarization is something we need to leave behind. Use our brains, use our spirits, if you want to call them that, our hearts above all, and try and embrace every possibility. If there is evidence, if we dismiss something, we don't attack somebody that might have a belief different to ours. We accept that they're different. There is a center ground where we don't all need to explode at each other. And I think that would be a much more sensible way of living if we can do it.
And I don't want to get political per se, but I will say this, you know, even I'm in my 40s. I sense a greater polarization of the country. I'm talking about America. Than ever. And it almost seems like somebody wants us to be at each other's throats. And, and it's very unfortunate. It's very unfortunate that we can't have political discourse without name calling and without, you know, saying you're a bad person because you believe this. Now, obviously, you know, if you're the kind of person that goes in a place and shoots up a bunch of innocent people or shoots a bunch of people, you're bad. I don't think anybody within reason will disagree with that. But if you hold a particular political belief, we're going to call you a name. And it seems to be going against the idea of discourse, which, you know, with all of its faults, that was supposed to be a big part of this country, is that we could talk about different ideas, and the West as well, Great Britain and Europe and so forth, with the democratic traditions there. And it seems like now it's just, you know, I will call it what I called it earlier. I think we are in an era of the new McCarthyism, and it's very unfortunate.
Well, it comes down to polarization again. And yeah, absolutely. There is, I think, you know, a cause to believe that a divide and rule policy is being used. When you set people against each other, of course, they're much easier to control. They are less strong. They're not going to stand together. And I think, yes, I think some of what's going on, both over in your country and my own here, and indeed bits of Europe, I think does seem designed to set us apart from each other. And I think that's unfortunate. And I think we have to try to see those games when they're being played and not play them, because that's how we are tipped like little dominoes. We're very easily manipulated into pointing fingers at other people, getting angry when we don't agree with them, instead of saying, but hang on, you know, it's a healthy world to have different opinions. Variety is the spice of life, as they say. We must allow for it and not just attack someone because it's not what we believe. But we are encouraged to do that. And again, a lot of people think this is how the New World Order works, that it's a fantastic way of keeping us so busy attacking each other that we don't turn and face the agendas that we should be dealing with, the control agendas, the surveillance agendas, which actually are impacting all our lives. All the time we're busy fighting with our neighbors, as it were, we don't address the real issues. And I think we need to wake up and step away from that, because I don't think that that's helping anybody at the moment.
I think of my best friend who we have very different political beliefs, and I'm not going to say my political beliefs because then I'll turn half of the audience against me. But but the funny thing is that, you know, he'll say what he thinks, and I'll say you're full of crap, and I'll say what I think, and he'll say you're full of crap, and then we'll say, okay, now let's talk about the football game. I mean, and I think there's a certain amount of that in our society that we've lost, that, you know, we can disagree. You know, that to me, it's very much like being friends with somebody of a different religion. You know, you don't have to agree on your religion or lack of a religion. you can still be friendly in other areas of your life. And I think that's something we've lost as a society, at least here in the States. And I think it's very sad.
Well, I mean, I think the best word that we could use there is tolerance. And, you know, in history, if you go back to the 1600s, especially in England, tolerance was something that didn't exist in large measure. That's why a lot of people fled to the Americas and, you know, went over there to create their own societies because of the intolerance. Gradually, we have learned. But what I think is disturbing is that, yeah, this intolerance still comes back. If somebody disagrees, if somebody has a different view, well, like you say, fine. You know, you say, yeah, shut up. You know, let's have a beer now. It does not need to go any further than that. And I think, yeah, we need to not be led down those avenues.
Well, it's been a great conversation. I've really enjoyed it. I've enjoyed it. There's so much we didn't cover. You talk about who we're dealing with, the green dilemma, caging the human spirit, the war on liberty, of course, the moon landing, which we didn't even touch on. And boy, that's a hot point topic. Andy Thomas, where can people find more information about you and find the book?
Sure. I mean, if they go to my website, which is www.truthagenda.org, you'll find out all about me and my work and my books. And the Truth Agenda, the US edition, it's published by Adventures Unlimited Press, easily available in America. It's out there through them. It's on Amazon. My book, Conspiracies, is also out there, published by Watkins. But yeah, if you go to my website, truthagenda.org, you'll find links to all of these.
Andy Thomas, thank you for joining us today on Conspiracy Corner.
Pleasure. Thank you.
The book is The Truth Agenda, Making Sense of Unexplained Mysteries, Global Cover-Ups, and Visions for a New Era. We thank you for joining us today, and let's try to get along. We'll talk to you next time on Conspiracy Corner. Bye-bye.